This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of August 24th. I'm John Gibson, and with me late on a Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing very well, sir. How you been?
I like it hot, so I've been fine, but, you know, people around me complaining about the summer heat, I'm like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? It's hot. Go out and enjoy it.
Indeed. Well, yeah, but we enjoy it with your mask on.
Exactly, exactly. And speaking of masks, everyone fighting the coronavirus worldwide, we thank you. And in Tokyo, where the hospital's really like a war zone because it's hot and we've got people struggling with the heat and heat exhaustion and all that stuff. I want to take the time to still applaud all those people. And I also want to applaud NPB and the players and the staffs and the coaches of all 12 teams because they haven't had a, you know, big breakout like the major leagues, and we've had to have stoppages or anything. So they've been doing a good job of at least staying safe and staying out of the way. Now, we know they're not testing as diligently as maybe some other entities, mm-hmm. the NFL, the NBA, and other entities, but they're testing enough, and I suppose. And we haven't heard anything, so I'm glad about that. And we've got, I mean, we're halfway through the season. We are halfway through the season, just about. So.
Yeah, and we've had fans in the stands for now a month and a half. And we have yet.
Been that long?
It has, since July 10th.
Wow.
And we have yet to hear of a single infection from people in a park, domed or otherwise.
Mm.
And to me, that's really the bright thing. But it is, you know, it points out I think it sort of reflects the fact that even doing everything right, you know, you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time when the wrong thing is in the air. And
just once, yeah.
Yep, and you got it. So please be careful, people. If not for you, for me.
Okay,
wait, that sounds kind of self-centered, but it is, you know, it
but
is
that's
what
the way
it
we
is.
Have to think, you know, I want to protect you, and in protecting you, I'm protecting myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And after we do this, and after we get through this, we can all go and do our dugout camera home run video photobomb stare.
Right.
That's so popular in NPB right now.
I guess.
I'm doing mine right now.
I'll bet you are. I can't see it, but I'm assuming it's glaring.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a telephone chat with Nippon Ham starter Drew Verhagen. We're going to talk about the PL, the CL races. Before that, we're going to touch on the managerial change. And if we have time, we will handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay. On Friday, I had the great pleasure of catching up with, well, I shouldn't say catching up, catching period, Drew Verhagen.
You sat behind the plate?
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming. I would not do it unless we were doing bare hand with Nerf balls.
And Aphis pitches only, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd be scared to do that. But
all right. Sorry to break your flow.
If I had a flow, you're welcome to break it. I have never seen one. Okay. So anyway, we had a chat, and there were lots of interesting things about Drew Verhagen. He came out of a big baseball powerhouse school, Vanderbilt University. And unlike, I'll have to check. I'm going to have to find a guy who played more than a handful of years as a professional outside of Japan and only played for one team, for one organization, because I found one in Drew Verhagen. I'm, you know, I always look and see, you know, somebody like Scott McGuff, you know, he's played everywhere. I mean, his, you know, I think Google Maps looks to him when it sees what part of the earth they haven't mapped yet. You know, he's probably turned down offers to have cameras tied to him. So But Drew Verhagen has spent his entire pro career up until this year with the Detroit Tigers. And it was kind of interesting. And in many ways, his profile is similar in that his career was up and down, you know, majors to minors, majors to minors, majors to minors. And the odd thing, or the, I guess the coincidence, is last year he became teammates with Matt Moore of the SoftBank Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
But they never played together.
Okay.
Because they met in spring training, and Matt was on the first team, was with the Tigers when they broke camp, and Drew was called up when Matt Moore went down with a knee injury.
Oh, okay.
So their paths crossed, and they weren't teammates on the first team. So anyway, we talked about, you know, this and that, and it was quite insightful. A couple of things he threw in there were kind of fun, and so let's have a listen. Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Drew Verhagen of the Nippon Ham Fighters, and thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, John.
Oh, it's really our pleasure. Now, you've had a good stretch there before the last start, and it was it looks like you're getting settled in and learning about the game here. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I'm always learning, you know, constantly learning, regardless where I'm at, just seeing new things from hitters and stuff, but especially this year with an entire new league for me and just a different approach to hitting that these players in this league have, so.
Right.
I've been able to settle in a little bit, but mm-hmm. I still feel like there's a lot more room to go and just constantly learning.
Now, well, let's stay on that about you know the adjustments you have to make to make your game work in Japan. What kind of things have you sort of modified or learned or adjusted? If you can share those with us.
Yeah. So I think the biggest difference in the hitters is maybe their approach to each at bat is much less of, you know, go big or go home, what you see in America. You see mm-hmm. guys swing out of their shoes, and they have one goal in mind, and that's, you know, not every hitter, but a lot of hitters, they have one goal in mind, and that's hit a home run.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that often at all. A lot of guys are trying to spoil pitches and foul pitches off and get your pitch count up. And at the end of the day, if they see 10 pitches and ground out for short, they did a pretty good job of getting your pitch count up.
Mm.
That's a good at bat. And so I think tough to say what I've done against those guys because
right.
sometimes they're really good at fouling pitches off. And even though you don't want to just lay one in there because they're good enough hitters to hit a base hit as well.
Right.
And so I think just they're very disciplined, and they're very, I call them kind of pesky hitters when mm-hmm. you stomp that far. So you have to be more locked in with your stuff and locating your pitch as well. Otherwise, your pitch count will get up really quick.
Yeah, I see that with, it's not just the imported players, but the Japanese pitchers have the same problem. How do you put these guys away when they're happy, you know, for them, 10, 12, even if they make an out, 10 or 12 pitches is kind of a victory.
Right, no doubt. Yeah, and I think it's just hitter to hitter on how to find out where their swing and miss zone is.
Okay.
So I've been able to work with our, you know, our analytics team,
mm-hmm.
get scouting reports, but mm-hmm. even when you throw it, there's a very small swing and miss zone on these hitters, whereas you're talking about maybe half the plate on some of the American hitters. So
right.
I think you just have to really block your stuff in, and your misses have to be much smaller, I think.
Okay. You know, choose from six games a day. And tell us
right.
a little bit about maybe what your best pitch is and what your maybe the most recent addition to your pitching.
Yeah, so I throw majority two-seam fastballs. You could call it a sinker.
Right.
On certain, you know, it's kind of there's days where it's more lateral movement, mm-hmm. and there's other days where it's sinking more.
Mm-hmm.
That's my go-to pivot. Throw a four-seam fastball sometimes off of that, but not near as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a slider, curveball, and changeup. The changeup is the one that I throw the least of all my pitches.
Uh-huh.
I still work on it, and I still throw it maybe 5 times a game or so, mm-hmm. but that's a pitch that I hope to incorporate a little bit more as the year goes on. But both my curveball and slider, I feel comfortable with.
Okay.
I locate them well and keep breaking them.
So with the changeup, sometimes do you have games or days where you're going, wow, that was a good one, and it gives you hope?
Yeah, there's definitely days where it's good. And I think a lot of times, though, especially early on with these hitters that don't know me as well, I felt like the changeup was almost doing them a favor.
Uh-huh.
And I needed to stick with my velocity. I throw hard, and I think throwing a 88 mile changeup at times was right in their bat path. So
yeah,
I just have to pick my times to use that, and you know, maybe as these hitters see me more and more, then I'll be able to incorporate it more.
Now, sometimes with sometimes with the pitches and describing pitches in Japan, there's a bit of a lost in translation kind of effect. Because if you say, I throw a sinker, do the pitching coach, and then you throw it, and the pitching coaches say, that's not a sinker? Have you ever had that one yet?
No, but they do describe, like, for instance, from my interpreter,
mm-hmm.
I'll hear him describe, you know, throw this guy vertical movement pitches.
Okay.
And I would think a vertical movement pitch would be like a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of vertical movement.
Right.
But that's not at all a vertical movement pitch. They're talking about a split or a changeup, which I'm not sure why that's considered that, but every time they say that, and they actually include a sinker on that too. So sinker, split, and changeup. I guess it's just one that a pitch that comes in and breaks down, you know, comes
right.
into a breakdown. So that's like a little bit of that's a big difference there. If you think you should throw this hitter a curveball and they're actually not going to change it, it's a big difference. So
right. They,
little times like that, mm-hmm. I'm caught on to a little bit.
Yeah, the reason I asked is because a sinker is one of these pitches that has a different meaning in Japanese. In Japanese, there are guys who throw two-seam sinking fastballs, but there's a lot of guys who throw a sinker which is actually a screwball. And so usually you have to just look at the velocity to figure out which, you know, if you hear somebody say he throws a sinker, you got to compare to see what else he's throwing, or else it's hard to tell. At least for off television. Okay. Now, let me ask about other adjustments that you've had to make. Now, this week, obviously, I guess one of the baseball topics around the world is unwritten rules.
Right.
And my podcast partner, John Gibson, wanted to know if you've learned any of the Japanese unwritten rules since you've been here. And
I think the only one that's really is after you drill a hitter, you're supposed to take your hat off and bow.
Wow, bow.
So,
the bow is pretty extreme. I've seen people
pretty
say...
Pretty extreme, yeah.
Yeah, a little nod usually works.
Yeah, a nod. Some guys go a little deeper with the bow, but I think I see more nods. You're right, you see more nods, but I don't know if I'm gonna do that one just because it's ingrained in me not to... Mm. You know, if I let one slip, I think being a little effectively wild can work to your advantage at times.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, you know. I guess there's times where I've taken blame for hitting a guy and I've said sorry, but in the heat of the battle, I don't think I should do that.
Yeah, it is. It's hard unless I think it is, as you said. It's you know, it's ingrained in them.
Yeah.
As well, so I mean, for them, it's not an adjustment. It's natural. There was a case.
Right.
There was a case once about 20 years ago, when one of the great players who played in Japan, Tuffy Rhodes, was on first base, and the pitcher drilled his friend and his teammate, and he didn't tip his cap, and he charged the mound from first base. And because the pitcher didn't chip his cap, that was his appeal, and his suspension was reduced from 3 days to 1 day.
Wow. Wow, that was in this league?
That was in the Pacific League.
Wow, that's really funny.
That was a long time ago. Tuffy was an amazing player here. And I want to speak a little bit because, you know, a lot of the guys who come here, you know, they bounce around a lot in the U.S., and I'm looking at your record, and you're really an outlier. I mean, you came straight out of, you know, huge baseball school, Vanderbilt, and then you went to the Tigers, and then you stayed with the Tigers. I'm going, this is maybe the first time I've ever seen that, a guy who never played with another team before he came here.
Yeah, I get that a lot. It was kind of surprising. That's a lot of years with one organization.
Mm.
But it was a lot of up and downs. I mean, I was designated twice. And cleared waivers both times, and you know, it just made sense to accept my assignment with that team where I was familiar.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about maybe electing free agency after one of those, but just to me, it made sense to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you know, it is really rare to see that in the States.
And so, was coming to Japan a big jump for you then, having only played for one professional organization?
Yeah, but I was ready for a change at that point. I think it was even timed perfectly. I was even telling my parents that I was ready for, you know, a fresh start.
Okay.
And whether that be in the States or over here, and I got that opportunity here, so I was excited to take that jump.
Speaking of newcomers to Japan, I thought it was very ironic that last year you were called up to the Tigers after Matt Moore, who's joined the Hawks this year, got hurt.
Yeah, I did. I got to know Matt last year in spring training and stuff, and we didn't play at all together during the season. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, he got hurt, and he was done for the year, and then I came up.
And I wish him well. I mean, I was glad to hear that it was his other leg and not the same injury that got him last year. So hopefully he'll be back relatively soon.
Yeah, thank you, Will. I heard you just threw a minor league game for sure.
Oh, okay, excellent. Now, now let me ask about other things in Japan. Were there? I know the fighters, scouts. I know Hargo and Matt Winters. They do a good job of preparing the players for, you know, the things, the challenges, and maybe some of the hurdles that you wouldn't expect coming here. But were there anything that surprised you when you did get here and you went, whoa?
I don't know if there was any you know, one thing, but there's been a lot of like little things. Mm-hmm. almost every day.
Oh.
during spring training, at least, you know, first couple of weeks, just the way that practice is run, or the way we do certain drills.
Mm-hmm.
Or the way guys play catch. An interesting one to me is that the guys all play catch here.
Mm-hmm.
And all the pitchers, they throw pretty quickly, they go through the catch play pretty quickly, whereas, like, in the States, we take a long time.
Right.
Usually, throwing, because that's the only throwing of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while. I mean, you wrap it up and it's done. Guys, you throw pretty quickly, and they go do their conditioning, they might do some cord, and they come back out and throw again. And that's when they start working on their pitches and stuff. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of station to station jumping around really quickly in Japan.
Yeah, there's so much going on during a pregame BP session, whereas in the States, there's one guy hitting, and that's it. Everyone else is shut. There's maybe a few ground balls being taken. You know, that's it. Here, you got the pitchers and centers throwing, you got two guys taking BP at once, you got catchers. Catchers in foul territory making throws. You got fly balls being hit to the middle infielders.
Wow.
I mean, it's stuff all over the place.
It's kind of chaos. Yeah.
But it's very controlled. Like it's controlled chaos, you know, so it's interesting.
Now, how about the schedule, the spring training schedule? Because I know when the Japanese players go to the States, tell me that not having days off is really hard for them. Because they they find that pacing themselves is very difficult. Was there any sort of opposite, you know, coming to Japan and having a day off? Did that throw you off any?
A little bit, because I'm used to throwing every day, especially in spring training.
Uh-huh.
We have 2 days off over the course of 6 weeks.
Right.
So we were in spring training this year, the fathers, we were going 3 days on, 1 day off.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I felt like that was a lot of days off. So on my off days, I was usually going in to play catch on my own just because I wasn't used to it and I wanted to be sharp for maybe I had a bullpen the next day or a live BP.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to be sharp, so I would go in and throw. But
yeah.
Now in season, I'm just loving our schedule. This is 6 days on. Every Monday off, it's a good schedule.
Yeah, if you're a starting pitcher, Japan's the place to be, I think.
No doubt.
Yeah, two days, you know, you're out of off the bench, and two, three days a week you're off the bench, and 1 day you're off, and Mondays are off, and the fighters are good because I guess they still don't practice on their travel day on Monday.
No, we have that day completely off.
That's unusual. Most of the teams, you know, they have workouts when they get to their destination.
Right. That's what I mean.
Okay. Now, let me ask a little bit about the pandemic and the COVID-19. How's that? I mean, it's hard to compare how it was in Japan before this, but how has it affected you personally?
Honestly, I think it had a really big impact on the year, just from the point of view, like no fans. I mean, this fan's not all that. I've heard nothing but great things about the atmosphere of these games and how much the fans play a role in it. That's just been a different experience, and then not being able to go out, experience the culture, and eat out.
Right.
I was really excited about eating all that food. You know, I had some, but not as much as I would like. And
right.
That's changed the year a little bit.
Well, hopefully next year will be you'll be unleashed, you know, you'll get the full blown experience. I hope.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah, it's been, you know, I know people said the same thing, and it's great been to experience Japan, but I'm saying you haven't really experienced it yet. I mean, Alan Busnitz of the Eagles said it's going to be some adjustment going back to the constant noise. Yeah, of being able to shout and cheer, because when the visiting team, you know, whoever's bet, even the visiting team, there'll be between 1 and 15,000 visiting fans in the park, and they'll be screaming when the visitors are batting. So it's constantly noisy.
Right. I think I'll like that. I think it's weird playing in an empty dome, like when you just hear the other. You just hear the other dugout yelling at you in Japanese.
Yeah,
it's a little different. It's funny.
Yeah, and Sapporo Dome in particular seems to absorb the sound. I mean, it's that's a quiet place. Okay. Well, anyway, I want to let you go, and I want to thank you again for your time, and wish you the best of luck and the best of health.
Thank you so much, Norm. I appreciate you having me on.
It's been a real pleasure. Hopefully, before the season's out, we'll get to talk in person, maybe from 6 feet.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Okay, thanks much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Drew. Thank you for your time. And, and congratulations on a good win today.
Oh, yes. Yeah, thank you, Drew. Hope to get to catch up with you soon. Soon meaning sometime next year. But nice work today as well on the mound. Yeah, good game.
Yeah, very much.
For the fighters.
Yeah, very much so. Now, what would you like to comment on?
Well, the first thing, I guess, that jumped out at me was the part about Drew saying, look, he's not planning to tip his cap and bow if he hits a guy. And I thought, you know, this kind of thing. Now, we saw this in the movie Mr. Baseball, and it became a thing. And I remember some people back home asking me if it was a thing. And I said, you know, I really never noticed. So I did start to watch for it after I saw the movie back in the 90s. and I see it a lot. And I don't, just like you said, I don't see the bow. That's kind of, I wouldn't say that's out there and being aggressive about it, but it's, you know, don't come at me, because I do remember Glenn Braggs.
Yeah, of course. And he stopped it. Now he's, you know, he's Glenn embellishes now.
Oh, stop. Stop. Who can follow that foolishness? Nobody knows what you're talking about.
Hashtag high heat.
Glenn Braggs ran out after he was tossed from a game at Nagoya Stadium. This is the old stadium. And ran out from the dugout a number of times chasing a pitcher who hit him.
Oh.
And, yeah, I was at that game, actually. And so I remember Braggs was playing with the, I think it was the Tyrone Whales at the time. It was back in the
It would have been, yes.
Yep. So, but I thought that was interesting that Drew said, look, I'm not sure if I'm planning to do that, you know, and you always hear when in Rome, right? And so you hear Drew say, hey, I mean, it said to me that Drew's thinking is, hey, one got away from me, get your butt on first place and let's play on. So I found it particularly interesting to hear that he's not looking to blend in that way.
Well, I think it was, yeah, well, I thought his analysis was very good, because he said, look, it's just not the way I'm wired.
Yeah, that's not
you know, it's, I'm not trying to be, he's not trying to be obstinate, you know, he's not trying to be the ugly American, but he's saying, look, this is not how I'm wired. And it's a habit that he has yet to form.
Yeah, well, as long as he's not plunking guys, it's not a problem. And like I said, I just found it interesting. I don't know that it's wrong or right or whatever. I'm not criticizing it. I like it. You know, you got to have some spunk. We always hear about guys coming here and trying to do exactly what, or, you know, we've heard the phrase, forget about everything you know about baseball in the States and learn the baseball that they play here. And that's fine, but you know, it can't be complete. It can't be 100%. You're still going to have your personality. And if that doesn't fit into your personality, just like some of the things that the Japanese team players do in working out, just like what Trey Hillman said when Makoto Kaneko came to his office and said, look, you know, this is good that you're thinking about us physically, but we want to go out and work hard and practice hard, because that's what we do. And we have to show the team that that's what we are. Well, that's in their nature. So you just do it. So it's good, Drew. Hey, do you, man. I'm fine with it.
That's right.
I also love how he talked about essentially the holes in guys' swings back in the States compared to the guys here in Japan. And so, you know, I'm not questioning his knowledge. Again, I don't take this the wrong way. I just find it hard to believe that guys in the States can't cover half of the plate, or don't cover half of the plate. At least the guys who stay up in the major leagues the whole time, and that the Japanese players seem to be better. But I don't know. I would have liked him to maybe elaborate on that a little more, just so that we could get clarity on it, because maybe he was talking about certain pitches, or maybe he was talking about certain counts and situations. And for instance, when the batters have a really good hunch about what's coming, and so you're just trying to locate it and pinpoint it. And anyway, it was good to hear Drew talk about that and say that the guys in MPB have good plate coverage with their swings, and talk about how his changeup was doing the hitters a favor. I just found that part really fascinating. And the way Drew pitched today, I mean, I don't remember who I was listening on TV. I wasn't watching most of the game. I just watched when he pitched. But the color analyst today said, you know, he's really good. He throws all his pitches with good control, and I don't see how anybody gets a hit off him. And well, he looked like he had no hit stuff today. I don't know how
he certainly did. Well, if you saw, if you were watching, you would have seen basically, I mean, one of the hits would have been an out. And I'm going to say it again. I think I said it last week. One of the hits would have been an out if he was a Japanese pitcher, because he would have covered first base right. And I'm still, it's like, I'm amazed.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't. And I say that because the Japanese guys are drilled in it. I mean, I of course, having said that, I saw an Oryx pitcher do it earlier this year, you know, run and stop and catch the ball from first base when he was still about two strides away, and then realize the runner was going past him. Well, that's what Drew did today. He ran to the wrong spot. you know, he didn't find the bag before he got the ball. And then when he got the ball, he looked and realized he wasn't near enough to the base to step on it.
Right.
So things like that. Now, all of the balls I did notice today, all the balls he hit were on the ground, which is nothing. I mean, he could have easily given up a hit with a couple of the balls that were grounders that were hit right at his fielders, but he got a lot of soft contact. It was an impressive thing. But I think I mentioned this when Nick Martinez spoke with us, that most of the guys who've got, you know, more than two pitches, if they're working
mm-hmm.
and they're locating, they're really hard. You know, they're really hard to hit. If they know what they're doing and their pitches are working, they're really hard to hit. And, I mean, it's usually the case that people's attention comes and goes. People's command comes and goes during games.
Sure.
I think that's when they talk about rhythm, is that what they talk about rhythm when they have a rhythm because their attention is not wavering. Perhaps. I'm not a pitcher, so I shouldn't speak for any pitchers for that matter. But yeah, I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, what stuck with you after you did the interview?
Well, a couple of things. About a dozen things, but I'm going to limit to a couple. One was the spring training. Because as I said to him, I talked to the Japanese players, and I know they tell me that it's a maniacally difficult thing to get used to especially the first year of having no days off for the Japanese guys.
Right.
And I was surprised that it was hard for him to get used to having days off.
Yeah, it did sound weird, but
yeah, but I can understand that because like the Japanese players, they've got things that they are used to doing and they have a sense of what's normal for them and what's right for them. And they're mm-hmm. put into schedules where it's very hard to achieve the norm for them. They're in kind of a new norm. They're in a new normal. So that was one. And the other one was the bit about the changeup, doing the hitters a favor. This is exactly what Jay Jackson told me a few times over the last couple of years, that he had, you know, he learned, like Zach Neal told us, that there are buckets of different types of hitters. And mm-hmm. you had to learn, you know, which ones, you know, you know your pitches, and you know what the coaches tell you and the analysts tell you about, you know, what pitches work against what hitters, you know, and you try to match those and set them up. But especially with the left-handed hitters, I heard a lot of right-handed pitchers say that the a two-seam sinking fastball against a left-handed hitter is basically a hit me to left field sign.
Okay.
You know, it's a target. It's not a swing and miss because they're not trying to hit the ball hard. They're looking to do that Norichika Aoki inside out, flip it over the shortstop swing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was those two things really struck me. And I guess the other thing I was thinking about after our chat was I want to kind of try to do a dictionary of Japanese pitches and then sort of like put in a table of who calls what pitch what. Because, you know, as I said to him, a sinker in Japan.
A dictionary.
Yeah, a pitch canary. A pitcher dictionary, which I had one when I was a kid. That's what I called it, a pitcher dictionary.
All right.
So anyway, yeah. So, I mean, the sinker, the typical Japanese sinker is, in fact, a screwball, typically by a right-handed pitcher, but not always. And a two-seam sinking fast, and then you see a guy who throws a sinker, and he calls it a sinker, and in fact, it's a two-seamer or a one-seamer like Tomoyuki Sugano's. So, anyway, that's just me. So I was thinking about that, and it was interesting to me that, you know, he had the response to his coaches was that a pitch that moves vertically is not a curveball.
Right.
You know, it's a
12-6 here, buddy. Get out of here.
It's a splitter. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So it's like, what do they got, a sign on the bullpen door says 12-6 curves not allowed? 12 to 6 curves not allowed between the hours
of 12 to 6.
The hours of 6 and midnight, I don't know. Okay. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun and very informative, and I appreciate the time.
Yeah, we certainly did. I do want to clarify, though, you did manage to mangle another question for me. Now, it wasn't that bad this time, so
Okay, I'll put that on my mangleometer.
Right, but I try with my questions not to lead the witness. So my question was, what types of etiquette / unwritten rules did you learn about when you joined the fighters? Not, you know, what unwritten rules are there? I forgot how you. I can't quite mangle it the way you did, but. I'm not sending you any more questions because you don't read them. And then what I mean by don't read them is you don't read them when it's interview time. You read them before interview time.
Well, I also had essentially the same question. And then
why did you just bump mine instead of mangling it? No, because mangling your question, John, is more fun.
# high heat.
I'm laughing alone here.
Yeah, well, that's all right. That's what, you know, we've known each other a long time. You're entitled.
Okay. All right. Let's make a four-seam transition. Now, we will talk a little bit about the fighters, but we want to talk about the Pacific League as a whole here. So before we do that, we want to talk about the Buffaloes and their managerial change that happened on Thursday. So I tweeted out early in the week last week about the possible timing when skipper Norifumi Nishimura would when the hammer would drop, when something would happen, and it turned out to be Thursday. I was making notes about what we should talk about during the show in terms of his leadership and his very predictable, at times, strategies, in-game strategies and all that stuff. But he stepped down on Thursday after they lost and the team fell 17 games under 500. So it was no surprise there. And Satoshi Nakajima, a former catcher with a long career.
Yep.
Long career. I think they said, I saw Proyaku News said 29 years. And
that's about right.
Yeah. He played with a bunch of teams. The Oryx Blue Wave, Nippon Ham, Seibu. And what was that?
He was, I don't remember if he was he was probably the last active Hankyu Brave. So he.
Right.
He
went, did say Hankyu. Yeah.
Yeah, he went to the Oryx Blue Wave when they sold the team. I mean, so, there were many of them who did, but he was just a baby at the time. He was probably 20-year-old,
right? And he was the farm team manager, so they just brought him up. And I was expecting, I don't know, I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe somebody else, but you know, he's the farm team manager, and that makes sense for teams that want to keep some continuity and have a guy who basically knows both the rosters, the top team roster and the second team roster. And what I liked immediately about Thursday, because I'm sorry, about Friday when he took over, he brought a few players up from the farm. He changed the lineup, put it the way he liked it. Now we don't know the insides of the locker rooms, obviously, and we don't know the relationships and the dynamics with the players and all that stuff. And sometimes you can see it when, in normal times, not the COVID-19 pandemic times, when you can get on the field before games, watch the guys go through practice, see the manager, how the players kind of react to them, see the coaches and how they work the players and what they're talking about, and just, you know, experience all that stuff. So now we're extremely separated because we don't get any locker room time in NPB baseball. Reporters don't get to go in the locker room. So it's very limited anyway, but I just got the feeling, because I watched all three games that Nakajima managed this weekend, that they won. They won all three games, so he has yet to lose as interim manager. And the whole atmosphere on the bench, I mean, he's more of a rah-rah, kind of Akihiro Yano, Hanshin Tigers, kind of a rah-rah manager. He's back there. He's pumping his fist. He's clapping. He's up. He's standing up. He's smiling underneath the mask. He's probably frowning underneath the mask when bad things happen, but you can't tell. But he's emotional, and the players just seem to be moving differently, in that they're not tight. They're not they don't look as if someone's going to yell at them for 20 minutes after the game because they made a mistake. And so that part is good. He brought some of the younger players up. They're very energetic. It just seems different. And they won a couple games, including today, that they would normally have made some kind of goofy mistake and lost, perhaps. They were leading, and then the Lions took the lead. Then it was 3-3, and Adam Jones hit a home run. But you would think, okay, you know, in past games, it would seem after that, well, they would think, well, it's late in the game. We've got our lead. Let's try to protect it. But the rest of the guys who came up after Jones rallied and put two more runs on the board. And the thing about this manager today is he brings in, I don't even know this guy.
I probably say Urushihara.
Urushihara, a guy who's a developmental guy who apparently he led the farm both leagues last year. So the Western League and the Eastern League. He was the saves leader.
23 saves.
And he with 23 saves and brought him up, and he's the guy who closed out the game. Of course, he gives up two runs in the ninth to the Lions, which is no shame because that lineup is really...
Yes, scary. But now what did you think about that?
I thought, Brandon Dixon, I think, had pitched, I don't know, he had pitched a lot this week. And because they're playing these six-game series, right, you get to see the pitchers so much that I thought bringing somebody else in was not a problem. I just thought, who is this guy and can he really do this? And, you know, had the Buffaloes not tacked on those two extra runs, they would have been behind by a run. You know, would have been 5-4 Lions and the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And who knows if he gets, you know, out of that or who knows. But so what I think about it, I thought it was risky. But it just, you know, every move you make on the baseball field sends a message.
It does.
To the players. It sends messages to the coaches. And there's a whole dynamic that's working there. So for him to bring this guy out there tells him, the pitcher himself, Urushihara's, you know, I trust you. It tells the players, hey, let's pick it up. Let's make sure we have his back. There are a lot of messages going on out there.
So. There were. And I'll tell you, I loved it. And I'll tell you the reason I loved it is, A, he knew this guy. Nakajima was the farm manager. I'll step back a little bit. Nakajima was not only their farm manager, but Oryx's farm team has been very bad for a long time. I have to go back and look. I'd have to search before 2016 to find a year when they were above 500 before Nakajima took over last year. Now, this is a team that is not going to be able to compete with the SoftBank Hawks and their core. They've got a Roman Legion down there on the farm team. You know, they don't have the depth and they don't have the bodies and they don't have they're not spending the money on the minor development program. So it's no shame to finish 7 or 8 games behind, but they were above 500 last year in second place. They are in second place now when he left. And as you said, he did save 23 games. He had a very respectable minor league record. And so that's one thing. Okay, is that he trusts his guys, which is very common when you see a minor league manager is promoted, is that they trust the guys in the farm team where the first team manager might not.
Right.
Unless their name's Tatsunori Hara.
Kaboom.
And, well, because, you know, that's props to Hara. That's what he does. He's done really well. Okay, so there's that. And then the other thing is, it tells me, is that he understands that a 3-run save and a 1-run save is two different animals.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now that's something that really isn't a thing in Japan. You know, it's 3 runs. It's a save situation. It means closer time. But, the fact is that a 3-run save's probably about 6 times as easy as a 1-run save. So I'm just throwing the number out of my head. I don't remember if it's 4 times or 8 times, but... quality relievers, the best relievers will blow probably a quarter of their 1-run saves and virtually none of the 3-run saves.
Okay.
So to me, that tells me you've got somebody who's thinking about different things. You know, as you pointed out, lighthearted. Now, the one thing, and I'll go with two, I cannot conceive. One of the coaches who came up was a former Buffaloes and Eagles outfielder named Ryutaro Tsuji, who I barely remember from his time with those two teams. And I can't conceive of a coach on Nishimura's staff or his predecessor Junichi Fukuda's staff jumping onto the field maniacally laughing and screaming before.
Celebration, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That this was a joyful group. And I thought, joyful, I mean, I remember seeing, you know, back in the day when Daijiro Oishi was the manager, and it might not seem like they were having a lot of fun, but they had some guys on the team that were fun. You know, Tomotaka Sakaguchi was there, and he was kind of a wise guy and, you know, a fun leader, you know, cracking jokes when they were warming up and such. And the Buffaloes under Nishimura, and I think to some degree the Marines when they were under Nishimura, tended to be a little dour. You know, he's a disciplined guy, and I'll be honest, I really like him. I mean, he's always been very kind to me. That being said, you know, he is what he is, but he's a knowledgeable guy. I found him to be very honest and very upfront, and, you know, and it explains things when I ask him questions, and a lot of managers don't like to do that, but he's also kind of a old school disciplinarian.
It did seem like the guys were tight at times, and that's why they were making some of those game costing misplays. And
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
some of those errors or just poor decisions or common mistakes that we see. You know, it was a mess. It really was a mess.
I think their cleanup hitter right now is Keita Nakagawa.
Yeah, who had gotten, you know, shipped out because he didn't play some.
Yeah, he made a mistake in the field, and he had a bad at bat. And this is what happened to Takahiro Okada last year. He had a game. Well, to be fair to Takahiro Okada, he had several years of bad approaches at the plate, and you know, he developed really horrible habits, and he came up and he was the. You know, and he did poorly, and then he wasn't paying attention in the field, and he got shipped out. But he didn't get shipped out like for a week. He got shipped out in maybe June, and he never came back.
Yeah.
And okay, so we had Keita Nakagawa, who had been sent to the farm team and brought back briefly and sent back, and then all of a sudden he's back on the first team, and you know, which is weird, and he's playing in the heart of the lineup for Nakajima, and another guy is Yutaro Sugimoto, who played quite a bit last year
and mashed against the Lions at MetLife Dome, particularly hitting a couple long home runs in a game that was very memorable, and had a bashing weekend out there. Then all of a sudden he couldn't hit anymore and was gone.
Right. So he's been on the farm team, and, you know, and these farm managers know who's putting in the work, and they know who they can trust on the farm team. So he brought up Taisei Urushihara today, and he gave him a chance in an important situation, but not a real high leverage important situation, but a situation that people care about. You know, the 3-run save. You know, a save's a save. Okay, yeah. But it's a fairly safe situation, and he brought a guy he trusted who didn't have the experience. And how valuable is that for this guy to get this important result in his first game? You know, and the manager said, "I'm going to trust you." And the player's probably thinking, "Save situation," you know. But I'm thinking, "Well, he knew it was 3 runs, so I'm going to put this guy in a situation where he." What it said to me is, "I'm putting this guy in a situation where he can achieve and get the maximum value."
Okay. You know?
So anyway, it told me a lot about him, and I of course, I'm a huge advocate for hiring the minor league manager anyway. So good move. And I did read somewhere on Friday that this had been kind of the plan, that he was going to be the next manager anyway.
I see.
So well, they just kind of pushed that plan up ahead, pushed it forward a little bit.
And he certainly won the weekend. He swept his three games in charge there. So that was good and good for Oryx. And, brighter day. I mean, Adam Jones hitting home runs in three consecutive games, that doesn't hurt, especially they were timely home runs. So they performed well as a team, not just individuals. And that was the biggest thing for me. And they didn't make those mistakes and they didn't cough up the game. Instead, we had Lions fan Costa Freak saying the loss was unacceptable. Why? I don't know. I didn't ask. I thought it was. I don't know why it was.
If you're a fan, you have a right to say every loss is unacceptable, whether it is or not. Go ahead, go for it.
I see. All right. Well, yeah. I don't know why those losses are unacceptable, but the other ones are acceptable. Let's move along. Now, there's one team. I have a question for you. There's one team that has two hitters in the top three in the Pacific League. They are in the top three in hitting home runs with two strikes, at least two strikes on them.
Okay. Want
to take a guess who they are? Because you have no idea. I'll just tell you.
It's in the Pacific League, you said?
That's correct.
It's the Yakult Swallows, then.
I'm sorry, the Pacific League.
Okay. I have no idea.
How could it be the Yakult Swallows? I know you have no idea. I've been calling them Chubbs Inoue, Seiya Inoue of Lotte, and Leones Martin of Lotte.
Oh.
Those guys have... Inoue has eight.
Martin, two strike home runs.
Yeah, Martin is tied for second with seven.
Wow.
And I bring that up to just talk about the Marines because we had Brandon Laird on the show recently. And I say recently, but I think it was
this year is recent.
Ago. And this team has just been tormenting the SoftBank Hawks since last season.
Well, I think long before last season, but it was prominent last year.
Season. Going back to last season, they're now 22-11-1. The Marines are against the SoftBank Hawks, and they're 5-3-1 this season. But they were, before they lost the last two in this series, they were 5-1-1. So, and then we got the word when they won the other night that it had been 50 years since the Marines were alone atop the PL standings in August. And that seemed weird to me because back in 2005, that magical season under Bobby Valentine seemed like they were in first place the whole season.
Until the end.
Yeah, yeah. Until the end when they ran away with it in the Japan series. But I don't know. That's true because they came back from...
they had to win on the road in the playoffs. Yeah, they had to win
on the road in the playoffs against SoftBank.
So I'll throw you a little aside there.
Sure.
Wayne Grassick, in one of his less politically correct moments, told me him asking Bobby Valentine after the Japan series if he wasn't ever, he didn't ever feel frustrated never winning his division in the regular season.
Ooh. That's like going into a place with landmines and stomping your feet to check.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Sorry, Bobby. Sorry, Wayne. But and it was a touchy subject, and Bobby had some hot button. He's a human being, and he's got some hot button issues. I do too. So.
Yeah. So they had the Marines had this unlikely victory on Thursday. Here's the thing with the Marines that I'm seeing right now, especially with the Hawks, and the Hawks just have to hope they don't have to tussle with this team in the playoffs. They get behind, and even though they don't have all the home run threats throughout the lineup, they seem to get the home run when they need one. They seem to get the extra base hit when they need one. They rally. They put a really good at bat on whoever's on the mound. And, having Takashi Toritani score all the way from second on his 39-year-old legs on Thursday to win a game late in walk-off fashion, that just had to just torment the Hawks. The Hawks came back and won on Saturday and Sunday to get out of that series alive. But they just, they probably look like they've been through a 15-round, heavyweight match because they had to use everything and everything they had to to get through it. So the Marines, I really like. Like I said when Brandon was on, they have a real good mixture of young players who are producing. In fact, remember we had Frank Herman on, and he talked about Toshiya Sato, the young lefty hitting catcher, and Sato was used in a pinch hitting role late in the game on Saturday. Now he got him even. I think they ended up losing the game because Yuki Yanagita exists. But
yes, he does indeed.
He's
an existential threat to baseballs everywhere.
But that team is feisty and scrappy and all the things that you want to talk about, and about a team that's probably an underdog. But the Hawks, man, I think they'd probably rather face the Eagles in the playoffs, not these guys.
Could be. I mean, my biggest complaint about the Marines is they were wearing, I guess, their Sunday home jerseys going to be their players' jerseys with the nicknames.
The light blue, yeah, the ocean blue or sky blue or pale blue, whatever you want to call them.
Okay. Pale blue, is that like bucket blue? I don't know. But anyway, my biggest complaint about the Marines is we never get to see what Iguchi's nickname is on his shirt.
Oh,
I want to see it says Gucci
or Skip
or don't even ask,
or I'm younger than Toritani.
Yeah, I did love the Toritani play. Of course, it doesn't happen if it's not two outs and a full count that he's running on the pitch, but right. But still, I couldn't have done it. He can run rings around me. So,
well, yeah, I thought it was very timely that our listener Ollie in Canada asked us that question about the foul territory, because that's one of the parks that has a lot of foul territory, and that's why he was able to score. In part, that's why he was able to score from second on that play. So, And speaking of the Hawks, you know, they lost that heartbreaker in 10 innings to the Marines, but. I'm thinking Skipper Kimiyasu Kudo could have made a lot of different moves throughout that series, and he didn't seem too broken up about the losses. He just thought, well, you know, we're trying to work some guys back into the lineup. We've got Yudi Spill, Graciel, and Alfredo Despaigne, they're back, and Coco getting a break on the farm here, and Dennis Arfate is gone, and the bullpen is stumbling at times, and I think the team is really challenging now, so I don't. You know, they did win these last two games. I don't think he's real broken up about anything. It's all, I think his attitude is what I've said before in the show, losing is learning, and they're learning a lot right now. not that they're losing so much, it's just that they're not winning a lot of the battles in the games. They might come out on top in the war of the game, but they lose a lot.
Yeah,
of battles.
I think working guys back in is appropriate, because, of course, right now they've got they're doing what teams are doing with their older starting pitchers a lot, is dropping them, you know, sending them down to the farm every three or four starts. So right. They were without Tetsuo Shiwada this week, and he's one of their big guys. Maybe he's one of the guys, you know, one of the guys the Marines beat up all the time. I don't know, but he, you know, they skipped his start, and so they brought in somebody else, and they had I think, having watched Yurisbel Graciel play in the outfield this week, I think there's going to be a lot of adjustment time for him. He looks like he really has not played a lot of he's not been out trying to catch fly balls in a long time.
Well, I think that's a fair statement. But again, I was looking at it as, A, he's in a windy park in the first place, and there are a lot of left-handed batters who hit these twisty pop-up floater balls that are hard to catch anyways. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know what, this is a tough place to come back. Maybe you should, you know, if you were back at the Dome in Fukuoka, it would be different. But I think
perhaps
I'm a break on some of those plays, because, yeah, a couple of them were, like I said, up in the wind off twisty left-handed bat guys who were just smacking at the ball anyway. So
okay, that's fair enough, I guess. But he did a little, I mean, today he looked really frustrated, you know, when he went back, the body language was when the ball came off the wall and he was it went past him backwards, you know, it went back the way he had come. He just kind of stopped and he looked around to see, oh, who's going to get this ball? And then he looked.
Help.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, he was about to raise his hand for help. And
teacher.
Then he realized he was, you know, he would have had to wait like a minute before anybody got there before him. So he's got to start jogging after the ball now after he gave up on it. And it looked right. Really, you could just see the frustration in his eyes. Like, why is this happening to me?
Well, it's not just happening to him. So
No. Happens to me every day, dude.
Yeah. The Eagles, they're treading water at the moment. I don't think they had probably their best performance up in Hokkaido on offense or defense consistently. They
won two and lost three, tied one.
So that's not a great performance, but you know, they're treading some water. Some of the guys who started out hot are not as hot anymore. Yuki Matsui.
He pitched well, actually. I think he pitched well enough to make say, okay, I'll be honest, I didn't watch his previous starts, but I did watch his start the other day, and I was impressed enough. What he pitched against Nick Martinez, and I was impressed enough with him to think he can do it. He's got who was the other guy who was throwing that back foot slider today that was really nasty? It might have been one of the Buffalo's battalion of relievers today. But anyway, he's got that really good. He's always had a good slider, and so he's throwing a back foot slider now, which is so rare in Japan that it gave people fits the other day. I mean, he did pitch. I thought he pitched quite well. In this series was that the fighters did a really, really good job of just messing with the Eagles hitters. You know, they've been messing with pitchers all over the league. And I think the fighters made some adjustments to their hitters, and they did, and they executed. And of course, having Kohei Arihara kind of establishing some, you know, sort of like figuring out what's working and what isn't working. Because he's had a couple of sharp starts now. And to the thing, you know, I think with the long layoff, guys were a little bit out of sorts, you know, that you don't know where you haven't pitched competitively for months, and you don't know what to expect. You know, it's like it's another off season, and you don't know if the pitch that worked so well for you in October is going to be there in April.
Right.
And I think that we're seeing some of that, guys, you know, just sort of thinking, well, this worked in camp, I think it's going to work now, and finding it isn't.
And the fighters, I mean, they moved over 500 today with the win by one game. Nick Martinez pitching really well.
Except now he's on the farm team. I don't know. I haven't heard the reason for that. It might just be a rest thing.
Yeah, I didn't hear a reason either. I was assuming.
We often don't. I mean, the best thing we ever get is upper body fit, lack of upper body fitness.
Yeah. And but they, you know, they're over 500. Kotaro Kiyomiya had a big day today, a home run, three hits, four RBIs. He had kind of a breakout game. Some of those, I mean, that might happen among players who are still learning, but I'm not giving up on him yet. And hopefully, you know, I did get a glimpse of Proyaku News before we started taping tonight, and one of the old fogey guys on there said, hey, look, you can't.
I know who you're talking about. His first name escapes me.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Can't really drop Kiyomiya down to the farm because he's going to hit farm pitching. You know, he's not really going to learn enough. And he's the kind of player you're going to have to put out there and get his at bat to get him in the experience up there and see if he can play or not. The guy didn't say this, but I'm assuming he meant it. See if he can play or not, or just give him enough at bats to say he can play. And you know, you can't say enough about Sho Nakata.
23
runs to lead Japan right now. And I mean, I keep saying, I do have this philosophy that if a guy puts up the same numbers every year, he's getting better every year. And the reason is because you can't put up the same numbers doing the same thing.
No, that is absolutely. Well,
you've got to get better. Now, the numbers might not always improve, but you've got to get better to put up.
I would say that is I understand what you're saying. I don't think you're saying it really, really well, but I understand exactly what you're saying.
Well,
the reason is that numbers vary so much by things that have nothing to do with the player's ability.
A lot of times, and I'm not talking about basically only in baseball or, basketball. I think
I understand.
But I think if you get enough at bats to where you can have, in terms of home runs, who knows how many runs you can drive in?
Home runs are good. Home runs.
Runs and batting average. If you can.
Batting average is really unpredictable. Stick with home runs. Stick with home runs and walks and strikeouts.
We have to go on something. We can't just.
You can't, but there's very little to go on. I mean, to be honest, the amount of the variability in a season batting average is probably, if a guy gets it, you really don't know in one season if a guy hits 300, whether his true ability is 250 or 350.
If he's not striking out all the time and he's making enough contact, and
strikeouts are a big thing because
he does it consistently.
That is part of his skill level. But what I'm saying, I know what you're saying, and I do know what you're saying, is that if you're not, you have to keep moving the. Well, first of all, one way of looking at it is if you're in steady decline, as he kind of was for a few years. Shonakata.
Oh, Nakata. Okay, I'm sorry.
When you're in steady decline, like he was in the years when he was sharing the spotlight with Shohei Ohtani. Whether those two things are related, I don't know. But he was. I know he did have injuries. But if you're in steady decline, you kind of think, well, somebody's adjusting. Other people are adjusting better than you are, or other people are growing. I mean, you do have to grow. You do have to learn and acquire skills that are not going to be, that are not going to regress with time as much.
Okay. All right.
Your comment, I think that his consistent performance is evidence that he is making really good efforts. And I think that is probably accurate.
However we want to articulate it.
Yeah.
He is there among the leaders this year. He's really doing well. I love to see what he's doing. And I'm not sure about this camera bomb or photo bomb or video bomb thing after the home runs that's spreading like wildfire. And I should say that with all the wildfires going on in California, I hope everybody's safe. But we got to go on to the Central League, or we're never going to finish. So let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the Central League. I guess the talk of the Central League has to be the Chunichi Dragons. And last week I talked about the fact that maybe the other Central League teams were going to send them something for Christmas or something, because they had pulled the Giants back to the pack a little bit. But the Dragons started stepping on some heads and moving up themselves. what's more important is the way they have been pitching well and actually getting those timely hits that we were talking about they weren't getting as the losses were piling up. And I think it's safe to say since the calendar clicked over to August, they've had the best starting pitching and the best bullpen pitching in Japan. And now I haven't checked that, but I look at their record.
I think it's arguable. Sure.
Yeah. They haven't been giving up a lot of runs. They haven't scored a ton of runs, but they've had their games. They had their first double digit scoring game recently in this month. And they've gotten these guys like Koji Fukutani, who the fallen closer, I want to call him. He obviously has.
Yeah, they've got a lot of those guys around. They got a whole basket of those guys.
Yeah. And he has obviously been working on his secondary stuff. And I was talking with Coaster Freak, our buddy, on Twitter. And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, again, I say if you're going to stay, guys get better. I mean, you're not convinced probably about Shota Dobayashi, and I think he can win the batting title. And
I think he's gotten seriously better.
Well, the last time we talked about him, you just said, no, I'm not. To move on.
I'm being misrepresented by John Gibson. Somebody help.
Hey, you feel free to bring some topics to the show. Just, you know, send them to me during the week and we'll talk about your topics when you want to get them on the show.
But right now we're talking about your topic.
I'm talking about my topic that I'll cut in. I don't think, you know, Tochiki Abe had a 3-game stretch where he hit home runs. He's come back to being a reliable hitter, and Shuhei Takahashi, who's had that hamstring injury, is not where he was previously or before the hamstring injury, but he's starting to come around. Yohei Oshima, Diane DeCiego.
Yes.
Yeah, they're all starting to hit a little bit more, and that has helped. And, you know, the Giants seemed to be the clear front runners, and they were running away, and the Dragons put a kind of a whipping on them recently. And so now everybody's kind of close, and I think the big thing about the Central League right now is you look at the teams. Everybody except the Giants either has 26 or 27 losses. So, and I think the Dragons, you know, clearing out or getting the victories obviously are going to help, but you know, not having more losses than everybody else will give them a chance. So I like I said, I think there'll be no shame finishing in last place in the Central League this year. I think it's going to be close, and all these teams are probably really close. Everybody's taking their turns, having good spells and bad spells. But I like what I've seen from the Dragons, and I think, you know, they're kind of excited about it as a team because they looked like they had I thought their manager was going to be in trouble if they were as they were heading toward double digits in losses. I'm sorry, going double digits under 500, and they just everything just changed on a dime for them suddenly.
Yeah, I think the addition of Yariel Rodriguez was very big.
Obviously, yeah, he has been great for them.
And then it's hard to overlook somebody winning 4 straight complete games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, getting Zuolo Amonte back, because this is a guy whose only weakness, well, okay, I'm sure he has other weaknesses, we all do, but his only weakness as a hitter is not being healthy all the time, because you look at his numbers and they're just, you know, he's basically an MVP player who can only play 3 months a year.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, he doesn't have a lot of defensive value, but heck, you know, with that offense. And Yohei Oshima, of course, has turned it on. As you pointed out, a lot of guys turning it on, because at the start of the season, it was pretty much just the Dion Viciedo show.
Yep.
And now he's not hitting, but, you know, he's still hitting, but he's not the guy right now. Everybody's contributing, and the pitchers are pitching. So it's very much it's a very nice thing to say. And a very nice thing to see. I have seen that right now the Bay Stars are going through kind of a slumpish kind of thing where they're having trouble with the starting pitching, which was supposed to be the big thing. But, you know, it comes to pitching, does come and go. And the Giants, Tomoyuki Sugano has been absolutely brilliant a few starts. And so for the person
never lost.
Yeah, so for the person who's listening who said his bad season last year was because he was gutless, well, take that.
Yeah, that's
you know who you are, and fans. You know, and I'm not taking a cheap shot because you said it. Okay.
Yeah, it's just angry fans when you know their toys don't do what they're supposed to do. Because I think they just think that these guys are machines, and they're not, man.
Well, it's disappointing, you know. But I did write in my blog post today that there was a nice comment from the always. He's not, you know. I called him Japan's favorite baseball curmudgeon, who is. Japan's favorite baseball curmudgeon, Isao Harimoto, who had who had nice things to say about Hara's using a position player to pitch. And mm-hmm. He said that Yariel Rodriguez reminds him, he said, his stuff is virtually unhittable. And when he goes on the mound, you get the same feeling that you do when Tomoyuki Sugano pitches, that your team's going to win.
Wow, that's high praise.
It is indeed. So, wow. You know, we'll see who he takes down a peg next week.
Right.
Got to get back. Got to get Harimoto's got to get his groove back.
Yeah, maybe it's going to be somebody on the Tigers because they went 37 innings without scoring a run this past week. And then
that's a lot of that going around.
Yeah, and then on a night when they score and Justin Bour hits two home runs, he ends up being a sidebar to Shintaro Fujinami, who won his first game since September 29th, 2018.
Yeah.
And he pitched. It wasn't great. The numbers weren't great. It wasn't a quality start and blah, blah,
well,
blah.
Well, the numbers would be better, except he's got a kind of a problem, which is picking up the ball and throwing it to first. I mean, I'm not kidding, and I haven't looked at his actual errors, but somebody's saying he's got the yips. And it could be, you know, the Steve, you know,
I tweeted
Steve Sachs disease.
Chuck Knobloch, Steve Sachs disease.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. So, the Tigers kind of struggling, the Bay Stars kind of struggling with some inconsistent hitting, the Swallows. When they're consistent with the hitting, they can't get any pitching. When their pitching is somewhat good, they can't score enough runs. So, or they just figure out ways to lose games, or something happens, or something.
Or in between games, like tonight, when the bullpen looked like a bullpen, you know, they got seven solid innings from their starter, and they won 4-2, and it's like, oh, so this is how it works. Yeah. This is how normal teams do it. We wondered. So how come nobody told us?
Yeah, we can do it. All right. And making a one seam transition. So we did ask Drew Verhagen about the unwritten rules. And, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff go on in the major leagues this past week with the Slam Diego. I can't even say that. Ridiculous name. Slam Diego Padres and all that stuff. So, you know, I just wanted to talk to you real quick as we wrap up the show here. From sign stealings to stealing to spikes up in the air at fielders, I just don't see a lot of players here doing things to incite incidents. They even apologize for sliding hard into bases, you know, and making contact with some of the fielders. You'll see him put a hand up and ask if the guy's okay, if they accidentally got their spikes kind of high or something, unless it's at home plate, because then all rules are off. But you don't even see guys trying to break up double plays. They just kind of peel out of the way when they're heading into second base. So I was just wondering what kind of unwritten rules have we
not, having trouble thinking of any. I mean, we used to have the unwritten rule that said if you body slammed an umpire, it was okay. They've done away with that one.
Yeah, they erased that one from the unwritten rules.
Indeed.
My copy right here. It's in Japanese, though.
Yeah, it's written in invisible ink. That's why you can't see it unless you add lemon juice to it. It's not unwritten. It's just written so nobody can see it. I'm trying hard to think of some unwritten rules. I mean, there was a big... there was an effort to enforce the idea that baseball should be played a certain way in Japan in terms of, you know, the use of sacrifice bunts. And that was very successful. And but it's old, you know, it's going, we've got so much variation now in Japan that, you know, it's not a big deal. I mean, I did kid a lot about Norifumi Nishimura, but he was not even like the biggest bunter of his generation. But that the generation in which he was a regular player, you know, the mid 80s to the mid 90s was really the sort of revisionist history in which a bunch of disciples of Tetsuharu Kawakami, the legendary Giants manager, decided that sacrifice bunts were the secret Japan's secret weapon, and that they started bunting. I mean, and it's like they tried to outdo each other, and they tried to sort of, they got into like huge, you know, they wrote these huge treatises about the sacrifice bunt, and it was sort of like anybody who said anything, you know, said like, can we think about this?
Treason.
Yeah, well, they were branded heretics. They were attacked in the media. Yeah. And I'm not kidding. So I know at least one man
can we think about this?
Yeah, well, anyway, but that, yeah, but that's sort of the thing. And one I remember, and I guess I have to go back to Hiroshi Gondo, who basically lost his job because he said a lot of the stuff that is we commonly do in Japanese baseball is nonsense. And don't call me Kantoku, which is a director, but they use, you know, the manager is called the director, the Japanese word for director. He said, just call me Mr. Just call me, you know, just call me Gondo, Gomi Gondo-san. And that didn't sit well with a lot of people. You know, that was disrespectful to the game. You know, that's kind of one of the unwritten rules, that the manager is referred to as so-and-so Kantoku. This cultural science, I guess there are a lot of, as we spoke with Drew Verhagen, a lot of these things are just things that we don't really notice because we're not the ones growing up in the Japanese games, but you do see the Japanese players typically, I don't think universally, but typically when they walk on the field for the first time and when they leave the field, they bow to the field.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. The Japanese do it for all the fields. So basketball and football as well.
Sure. Sure. So I mean, all the players don't do it all the time, but I think that most of them do most of the time. And I'm sure some of them do all of the time. So there are the things, you know, and about keeping the dugout clean and, you know, not spitting all over the place.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, because I'm thinking about the situation in the States in which Fernando Tatis Jr. hits a grand slam on a 3-0 pitch when they have a 7-run lead in the 8th inning. And I'm thinking, I've never heard about guys complaining about that in Japan. And
no. You know,
Tatis didn't load the bases and Tatis didn't throw the pitch. And, you know, it's the equivalent of that little kid who's sitting in the waiting room with his mom and says, "Mommy, that boy's looking at me." I mean, then don't look at him looking at you. I mean, you know, it's just not his problem, you know, and it's not your problem. Mm. And I mean, I understand the competitive spirit and all that stuff, but I don't understand why other teams want to cry and whine when someone is beating their brains out because they're beating their brains out because they're in competition. So, maybe we'll ask some more players as we move on.
I think we really have to ask the Japanese players because I think a lot of the imported players, I know.
They probably get taught some of the etiquette.
Well, they do. Well, that's the thing. They get taught them, but,
you know, whether they choose like Drew to implement it or not, that's their decision.
But very often it's hard, you know, as an outsider, and you are an outsider and you're not hip to the lingo of a lot of the lingo inside the clubhouse.
Right.
And there's a filter that it is hard to understand the level of these things that is, you know, you don't have clubhouse enforcers. You know, I remember hearing a guy say about how Cal Ripken Jr. made him a better human being by beating the bejesus out of him for disobeying clubhouse etiquette.
Right.
You know, so you don't have the clubhouse enforcing, you know, some veteran enforcing the rules and, you know, telling him. Of course, Japan is all about seniority, so I don't know. But, one wonders.
Okay, well, when we get a chance to talk to the Japanese players, maybe next year, we'll ask. But in the meantime, maybe some veteran players here can tell us about it. Mm. All right, anybody?
So Matt Winters, that means you.
All right. Anybody who has a question, we will get to the questions next week. So send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast. On the Facebook page, you can leave us a note. Don't forget to send us an MP3 if you can via email. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you on jmulholland.com.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.